This is episode 33 of The Fifth Estate, Scotty Hughes and Donald Trump's first 100 days.
Did you know your monthly cell phone bill could be funding extreme liberal causes? That's right. Every time you make a call or send a text, you could be supporting left-wing organizations that want to grow the size of government and expand the nanny state. Fortunately, Patriot Mobile is helping you take a stand. Patriot Mobile is the nation's only conservative cell phone company. Patriot Mobile offers exceptional coverage and service, and comparable or even lower prices than other cell phone carriers. And the best part is up to 5% of your monthly bill goes to the conservative organization of your choice. There's no catch, just outstanding coverage, service, and the latest, greatest devices. So put your money where your values are and expand the civil discourse by switching to Patriot Mobile today. Patriot Mobile will even buy out your current contract up to $350, or they'll offer a free iPhone 6 with a $60 talk, text, or data plan, or a free Galaxy S7 with a $70 talk, text, or data plan. Call 1-800-A-PATRIOT today or visit patriotmobile.com/ricochet. That's 1-800-A-PATRIOT or patriotmobile.com/ricochet.
All right, it is time for another episode of Fifth Estate. I am Jay Caruso, one of your co-hosts. Mr. Neil Dewing is here as well. How are you, sir?
Hey, sir.
Yeah, I'm doing good. How are you?
Oh, I'm finer than a frog hair split four ways.
All right. That's doing pretty good. All right. So, hey, everyone, you know how it is when we start this show. There's a couple things that we ask you to do. One of the things we ask you to do is, if you're not a subscriber to the show, go out to and subscribe. You can go to thefifthestate.us, and you can find all the subscription links there. You can search for us on iTunes, other areas. Leave us a review as well. We like to hear that. Neil's ego needs to be inflated as much as possible.
And I'll tell you something else, folks. If you wanted to, you could even get on Twitter and message someone like, oh, I don't know, John Gabriel, and tell him what a great podcast this is on the Ricochet Network, which very kindly has allowed us into the fold there. So.
Absolutely. Ex-John on Twitter. So Donald Trump is now President Donald Trump, something you and I thought would never happen. Has happened.
I did not anticipate this.
We didn't see it. We were wrong. I was wrong. People say you were wrong. I know. I'm wrong. I was.
Believe me.
I can't deny it. I mean, I was wrong.
I am every so step of the way aware of how wrong I was at right. just about every stage.
Yes.
Of the 2016 primaries and election.
Yes. So there you go. There's our mea culpa. We're wrong. So, but he is the president. And so what we wanted to do, you know, this show is about having discussions about issues and topics and everything like that. You know, this is not crossfire. We want to talk to somebody. And so we said, you know what, let's go ahead and get somebody who supports Donald Trump, who was out there kind of battling for him, taking all of the hits, you know, even from people like me and you and everything else, you know.
So essentially someone who got it right.
Someone who got it right, yeah. So we have Scotty Hughes, who's the political editor of Right Alerts, is with us tonight. Scotty, how are you?
I am doing great, gentlemen. And if you're inviting me on to tell you how wrong you are, not going to happen. Because in a lot of ways, you were right. In many cases, you were actually right. Just don't get over your shock that me as a major Trump supporter.
Okay.
In a lot of cases, you were right. In any other time, you would have been exactly right. So we can get into the details of why I think you were right. And I'm not going to knock you. Maybe it's because I'm trying not to be like the pink hat wearing ladies of Saturday that hate men. And maybe I'm having sympathy for men these days because you guys are being pretty beat up on. But I think in a lot of cases, you were right on some parts. There was just one issue that I think that was kind of like the catalyst that caused this end result.
Well, Scotty, you know, the words "you were right" are among my favorite words in the English language. So this podcast is off to a great start as far as I'm concerned. But I think that we would like to get into all those issues, figure out where, you know, I definitely am interested in where I was right, but also where we went wrong. But before we get into that, maybe you could tell us a little bit about your background and what you've been doing recently.
Well, my background is I started off at 12 years old. My mother had me very early in age protesting abortion clinics here in Nashville, Tennessee, where I grew up, outside of Planned Parenthood. And while I didn't necessarily understand what was on the signs that I was holding, the garbage bag pictures that we've all seen, or what was going on inside that clinic, I knew that what was happening was wrong. I knew that there were babies being murdered, and that was wrong. And that was at a very young age. And as I grew up, I realized more and more, I saw the Iraq War, I saw the bombs that were being exploded, and I saw someone who I consider to be a mentor, Wolf Blitzer, with the bombs exploding in his head, talking about the soldiers and how everybody was transported to that place. And I realized that I also had a love for journalism. And so as I continued to grow up, I wanted a career that mixed both of them together, a passion for politics, a passion for activism, as well as journalism. And so I'll be the first to say I am an opinion journalist. I go out there and I tell the story of America. And for so long, I feel like most Americans outside of the Beltway, outside of New York City, their stories have been ignored. Their stories have not been told. And I'm not talking about just some fluff little feature story on the ABC or the nightly news. I'm talking about the real heartache, the real pain that Americans have been facing, especially these last 8 years. So I went to broadcasting school, got out and got into talk radio because I had an opinion. And I graduated, as I call a master's in talk radio. After out of 10 years of being in the business, I was able to go over to Iraq and cover the soldiers over there and the good that we were doing. And I continuously saw both the media and the politicians demonizing the good aspects of America, like our military, and continued to grow my passion until then it actually got to today, where we have this issue with Hillary Clinton back in 2014. We knew she was actually going to be running for office. We knew that she was going to be the one in the White House. And I wanted to make sure that she was the one that was not in there in the end. I wanted to make sure that she was not, I was going to do everything that I could do that she would not get in. And I knew that from the very beginning when I saw it with Donald Trump. And I saw how much the crowds responded to him and immediately jumped on the Trump train, knowing that that was one of our best chances to be able to defeat her.
Okay, so that's an interesting background where it took you through. So was your let me just ask you this, and before we get into like the what we wanted to discuss with the first 100 days, so was your point of view there, you wanted to back the candidate that you thought was most that had the best chance of winning? Was that
well, at the start of it, yes. And obviously, I wanted to have one that I believed was at the core conservative principles that I knew that we had a chance of being able to handle. And to me, that was obviously a pro-life, and who made the promise of being pro-life. And I thought that was one of the core, but also when I knew that our economy, I wanted somebody that was going to put our country back to work. All of the other issues were very important. Oh, and then the third one was obviously keep our families safe. I do believe that our country, you know, with the open borders, with our policies that are coming on with it, you know, we were seeing the attacks that happened in California and in Florida. I wanted a president that was going to put America's security and my family's security first. Those are my three big things. There's obviously a lot of other issues that us within the conservative camp can talk about, disagree about. But, you know, it would do no good for us if Hillary Clinton was in office for any issue, because all of those would be under assault underneath her administration. And I knew that we could not have one. And I still tried to rack my brain if Donald Trump had gotten into the office, who could beat this machine that the Democrats had created amongst the DNC that we now know, but also the Clinton machine, that they had already kind of coronated her. And we saw them be able to coronate. And once they coronate someone like Barack Obama in 2008, a community organizer, and make him president, it's a pretty uphill battle to have. And we were kind of set on that. So, number one, obviously, yes, it was just who could beat her. But then I also wanted to make sure that they had some core principles, those three things right there. Everything else we can debate and we can get over. But I knew that those are the three things that our country was really at risk for at this immediate time.
Okay. Interesting. Okay, so let's step into the Trump presidency. We'll start with domestic policy. So we've already seen a couple of those. I think it was today he signed some executive orders reinstating, I think, the Keystone Pipeline, and what was the other one that he did as well? that the environmentalists were blocking. Neil, do you
remember? Well, we got the Keystone Pipeline, and then he just put out there that the EPA don't post on social media, don't release press releases, just shut up. which it's like, okay, there you go. And I think, you know, for the justification, and I am not with the administration, I'm not on the inside anymore, so I don't know some of the justifications for some of the things that are coming out of there, but you have to realize at this point, he's an equal opportunist defender. If you are a part of a progressive agenda, he is going to make you angry if he has not already. And I give it by Friday, and you will have everybody on the left, because he's basically reversing almost everything that Barack Obama did the last 8 years.
Right. So the other one was the Dakota Access Pipeline is the other one that is now going to move forward. And he also, when he was signing those orders, stipulated that the steel that's going to be used in the pipelines would have to be made in the United States. So there's not going to be any imported steel that's going to pay for those as well. This is where we're gonna see some interesting things, I think, because this is something where the labor unions, in fact, Richard Trumka from the AFL-CIO came out and said, we think this is great that we're gonna go forward and we're gonna build these pipelines and, you know, these jobs are gonna be created. So that was really kind of, you know, it's kind of shocking when you're gonna see an AFL-CIO leader praising a Republican president.
Yeah.
So
well, and this is something that conservative critics of President Trump said all throughout the primary, is that, you know, he is not a doctrinaire conservative. He is not one of us in terms of the conservative movement. But if he's able to affect policy changes, it may be to his benefit not to be firmly within one camp or another.
Right. So,
but look at what he's done the last 48 hours. And this was always my comments, because it was not only that that brought the AFL CEO chairman to us. He also, you know, signed to stop and start backtracking TPP and repeal TPP. That was a huge one. The Trans-Pacific Partnership, something that most establishment Republicans were for. I mean, if anything, that stepped on their toes. So, you know, I would like to know, for those that are listening that, you know, are still not necessarily saying, what of all of the things he's done since the day he signed, since the first day in office, what isn't conservative? What has he done that his policies that are not necessarily, don't fall underneath the umbrellas and things that we have been screaming about for the last 8 years?
No, and it's true, and I give him credit. One of the things that he did that drove the left nuts was he signed the executive action that bars international non-government organizations that perform abortions. The Mexico City policy. So no international organizations that perform abortions can get U.S. funds. And so that's something that people have said, okay, that's a great first step. Now we're going to move on to see if we can defund Planned Parenthood. But let's talk about, now again, you said you're not on the inside, but let's just get, you know, you've been close enough, you followed it close enough, so you probably have an idea of what's going to happen. So in terms of domestic policy, what do you see over the next 100 days? What do you think is going to be like, is going to have the biggest impact, the one that is going, that there's going to be a fight over it, and it's going to pit largely Trump and other Republicans against the Democrats? You know, we're talking about tax cuts, you know, repeal of Obamacare. You know, what do you think is going to be the big battle, or is it going to be maybe the Supreme Court? What's your take?
Well, we already know where the Supreme Court's going to go. We've already seen some of those names that have started to come out. I think the biggest argument we're about to have, and you already sort of started to see it, is the repeal and the replacement of Obamacare. Here's where we're going to be in a problem with it. We don't have a Tom Price did have a plan. People obviously don't consider it to be a very solid one because they're not really touting it yet. The Republicans are behind the ball on this. We've had 8 years, to come up with a plan to replace it, yet we haven't. And so right now, I think Republicans are actually on the hot seat. And I think in 100 days, if there is not some sort of real action, not just talk, but real action done on this, and we basically press the rewind button on the hotty-totty face that, you know, Nancy Pelosi had with her gavel walking up the stairs. In fact, I want her to reverse it. I want to actually see her physically walk backwards down those stairs carrying the gavel and then break the gavel. Once we repeal Obamacare. But we don't have a plan yet, really, that people feel comfortable with in replacing it. But I think that's where you're going to see a real battle happen. And the one thing that I've noticed with Mr. Trump in the past, if he sees something within his own office that's causing a delay or ineffectiveness or what he considers to be losing, he has no problem firing, and he has no problem clearing house and starting all over. And so I think a part of his administration right now, some of these people that he's brought into the White House are going to be, you know, he's going to be looking at them going, this was our number one promise. Now, tomorrow, you know, obviously we're already working on immigration and what it's taking to build a wall or build the wall. And so I think that's another part that that he's going to be doing. But I think those two things right there could really make it or break it for some, not only Democrats, but more importantly, Republicans and his own appointees.
Mm-hmm. Do you see any potential conflicts there with Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House, as President Trump moves to repeal and replace Obamacare? Do you think that Speaker Ryan has some ideas about what the Republicans would like to replace it with?
I hope not.
Okay.
We do better when we all get along. And while, yes, you know, I have a love-hate relationship with Speaker Ryan. We kind of go in waves. But ultimately, I know that we do much better when we're all at least finding common ground and moving forward together. The Democrats want to see, just like during the campaign season, they want to see us fight at each other. They know that's the only way that they can defeat us. It's what they did in 2012. That's the only way they make us weaker. And so they're going to do everything they can. And I'm hoping that there's enough between, you know, the friendship that obviously Chief of Staff Priebus has with Speaker Ryan and the faction that he has and what he's done within the White House. I'm hoping that we don't. But I think you're right. I think if there is no action done, if there is not a real plan in place, I think Donald Trump's going to, or President Trump's going to hold somebody accountable. And unless Speaker Ryan gives him somebody else, I think that hat's going to be on his head come that day.
Well, and I think you're right about that. I think there are some encouraging signs for Republican unity in Congress. I read a Politico article today about even Ted Cruz is starting to play ball with Mitch McConnell, for instance, that sort of thing. So in an environment where someone like Ted Cruz, who made his name as a bomb thrower and is essentially an obstructionist, even when he is getting with the program and embracing the collegial aspect of the body of which he is a member, there's, I guess, hope for progress of a sort in Congress and getting things done, a unified Republican, minimizing conflict. Would you say that?
No, I think that's very true. As I'm sitting there looking over the headlines right now, you're already seeing that you've got people that are already saying, okay, give the power back to the states, which is the simple solution. I think any person who's watched healthcare could say, okay, this is just simple ways that we could solve the problems. Yes, do we believe, you know, while they're expensive, while we do pre-existing conditions, we like that clause. We think that should be in there. I'm not a fan of, you know, keeping kids on their parents' plan until they're 40 or 25, but 40. I'm not necessarily a fan of that, but if that has to be the two compromises that we have with the Democrats, I can live with those. As long as we get some others like state competition and we can set up within the states, let the states handle their own health care and let them compete mm-hmm. against another state for lower cost. It's not hard. It's not rocket science. Everyday Americans have a version of it within their own household budgets. It's just Washington, D.C. just needs to figure out how to do it on a larger scale.
And you think President Trump will be more open to compromise if making those deals? He is always touted his prowess as a deal maker. Do you think that will he be able to sort of use his bully pulpit to whip the Republican Congress into making those deals?
Well, I think the Republican Congress wants to. I think ultimately they want to because all of them know. I mean, I've never heard a Republican go out there and campaign that I like the Affordable Care Act and be reelected. They're not dumb. They know this is one issue that got them elected and in power in 2010, and they know it's going to continue. And one thing I will say about our side, those that run red, we can forgive, but we don't forget, and especially come election time. And we hold our own people's feet to the fire a lot. Tighter than I think the Democrats hold theirs to their campaign promises. So I think all of them realize that there's no excuse now. Before they could say, well, you know, we don't control the White House or we don't control the Supreme Court. Well, guess what? We do now. They have no other excuses to hide except to fix this problem that I believe was really one of the main reasons why Donald Trump won in November. In fact, it was probably one of the top three. And the liberals and the Democrats refused to admit it. But the best advertisement that went out was 2 to 3 weeks before Election Day, majority of Americans received a notice that their health care went up a percentage point or percentage or dropped. And not some 5%. We're talking 40, 50, 60%. That right there is better advertisement than any slick commercial or anything they see, because the people saw it in their own paycheck and they said, I don't care who the other person is. I just cannot handle any more of what we have.
I agree. Well, speaking of the Supreme Court, let's move on to the Supreme Court vacancy. There's the potential. Obviously, there's the vacancy. Antonin Scalia has not been replaced. And President Trump will now be able to nominate someone. I'd like to first get your thoughts on the potential replacement for Scalia and then move on to prospects for the rest of the court, as we have a number of justices who are in their 80s who may be retiring within the next 4 to 8 years.
No, I agree with that one. I think, you know, obviously Mr. Trump put out his list of 25. We've had everybody from Judge Napolitano say that, you know, he's reviewed the list. Trump is actually, I think he's actually going to be saying it here in the next week, if not by tomorrow. I think it would be very interesting to see. I will say this, and whether it's the future one, I know it probably won't be this first one, and maybe why they're getting along so well. But I actually think I'm a proponent, as much as I love him in the Senate. He's from Texas. I know we can, I know we'll be able to recruit. There is no stronger scholar of the law, of constitutional law, than both Senator Mike Lee and Senator Ted Cruz. I'm huge fans of both of them. We're before even this presidential election.
And I would dearly love for Senator Ted Cruz to be nominated to the Supreme Court.
I'm sorry. I think it would be. I think actually most Republicans would like it.
That's why Neil wants it. Yeah, he's
100% genuine right now. No sarcasm. Hashtag no sarc. I would genuinely applaud the nomination of Ted Cruz to the Supreme Court.
Well, and that's a good thing, and I it might be for different reasons, because I sent a little bit of sarcasm in there.
No. Hashtag no sark.
Okay, you have no sark. Okay.
Neil's issue is Ted Cruz would then be out of the Senate, wouldn't be running for president, and just be adjudicating constitutional law from the bench of the Supreme Court, doing probably, in my view, and I would agree, probably a lot more good on the Supreme Court than he would in the Senate. Because I don't think the Senate's a place for him. It's a deliberative body that kind of moves slow. I mean, and it's the Supreme Court. He'd be able to, especially during the arguments and everything like that. I think that's something that he's been there. He's Solicitor General of the state of Texas, so he's argued before the Supreme Court. He knows how it works. I think it would be a fine choice.
No, I think, I think why I'm absolutely in that fan right there. Yeah. And he knows the law, and I think he's a stickler for the law, and he will stick to it. He's a black and white kind of guy. So I agree with you on that. And like I said, Texas is in one of those states that we can get somebody else for. But I don't think he's going to be the first pick out of the gate. And I keep going back and forth on to who I think that Trump will put for. There's some really good names on there, and they've kind of been on there from the very, very beginning as to who he would pick for Supreme Court. I hate to, because this is one of those I think he's going to announce tomorrow, and I hate to put my name exactly around it, but he does, they're saying next week. I think it'll be by the end of this week, because people want action on this one. And you actually are going to be able to get around with it. We're hearing Judge Diane Sykes. I think there'd be a good female that would be good. The NRA backs her. I think that's, that doesn't necessarily help her in some cases. It does in my book. I think there's from the Third Circuit Court, you've got Judge Hardiman. He's already weighed in on a bunch of hot button issues. Whoever it is, though, I hope Mr. Trump picks somebody that would judge based on the law and not based on their opinions, as that's what we saw, I think, Barack Obama put in his suggestions, are people that we already knew where they landed, and we knew that they were already going to be political, even one, just amongst their names being mentioned.
Right. And there's also talk of who else is it? William Pryor, who's now William Pryor is from Alabama. And so there's this idea of some Republicans I've heard about this through the grapevine, saying they don't want to have to go through the battle of Jeff Sessions, who's from Alabama, and then the Supreme Court justice from Alabama, just kind of the whole Alabama thing that's going to cause problems. So there's also, and I'm not sure exactly how to pronounce his last name, Neil Gorsuch, who is on the 10th Circuit Court, is another one from Colorado, who is, from what I've been reading, is another kind of finalist that is in there in that group. And I think he said he was going to, I think his list is down to three and he was going to announce it. And I, you know, it's funny. I think you're right. I don't think he's going to wait till next week. If he's got three that he settled on, why would he? I don't think he's going to wait. I think he's going to come out and he's going to say it. And of course, you know, Chuck Schumer is going to run to the camera immediately and say they're out of the mainstream. And so one of the things that gives me concern, and I don't know about it for now, but for the future, and this is kind of a little off topic, but let me see what you think, is that Schumer has already said if there's anybody on that list, he's going to filibuster the decision. So the Republicans will have the opportunity. Right now, the nuclear option is only used for lower court nominees and for other appointments. It is not, does not apply to the Supreme Court. And, you know, would Republicans go that route? If he says, okay, I'm nominating William Pryor and Schumer says, forget it, it's not going to happen, then do they do that in order to get, you know, to go to 51? And will Trump, do you think, based upon the people that you know who are working with him and what's going on, that he will say to the Republicans in the Senate, let's exercise a nuclear option, let's get this guy on the bench?
Let me ask you this. Who would you rather, who are you more, I don't want to say the word afraid, who would you rather not go up to battle against, Chuck Schumer or Donald Trump and his Twitter? Who do you think is going to have more of an effect on you? Hands down, Trump is not going to allow an action on this issue. He's not going to allow his person to say that. We've already seen it. And he has no problem, I think, and that's what we're going to find, is he's going to have no problem going directly to the people calling out a Republican just as quickly as he would call out a Democrat, to which Reince Priebus reaches for his bottle of scotch that he's now, you know, keeping in his briefcase and takes a quick swig. I think that the biggest part in all of this is that why Donald Trump right now, if you haven't noticed, is just setting off, and we say nuclear bombs, but he's setting off just fire. And that's why I think he's going to announce it this week, because there are so many groups. It's almost like the lamestream media's head is spinning round and round. They don't know what, there's just so much that they want to cover. And even the Democrats, they don't know what to attack. So they're all having to split up. I mean, it's actually kind of a great strategy to warfare, instead of like setting one bomb off and giving it a week and letting everybody focus on it, then setting the next one. President Trump has just basically said, thrown them all, as I like to call a Mazel-Tov cocktail, and said, okay, you guys figure it out. Let's get some action, all of them. And it's actually a brilliant move when you're dealing with a very stagnant, stubborn Democrat side of the aisle, as well as some Republicans that are not really used to this much activity. In fact, I joke, it seems like somebody put Metamucil in the congressional chili in the lunchroom, because they're all moving really fast, faster than I've seen them move in a long time.
Okay. That's an interesting way to put it. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. We have some words to tell you about our friends at Blue Apron. Everybody loves food. But, you know, a lot of us are busy. We work long hours. We come home from work. We don't have time to really sit there and gather up a bunch of stuff and cook it. And the last thing we want to do is stick something in a microwave, peel back some plastic so that we get second-degree burns when the steam comes up, and then have to eat something that is only barely edible. And that, my friends, is where Blue Apron comes in. Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. Their mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. That's what's so great about it. For less than $10 per person, Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with pre-proportioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals, meaning you don't have to look at a recipe book and try to figure out what you need to do. It's all there for you. You can customize the recipe. So let's say you don't want fish. You can go into their system, go into your account, check off that you don't want fish. If you don't want meat, if you're vegan, you can do that. Sadly, that's your choice, but you can do it if you want to. Each meal comes with step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card. And again, the pre-proportioned ingredients, and can be prepared in 40 minutes or less. I have tried the Swedish meatballs and mashed potatoes, and I have to tell you, it is divine. This is good food, everyone. So you have to check it out. Here's the best part. The best part is you can start for free. That's right. Check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free with free shipping. Even better, by going to blueapron.com/fifth. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron, so don't wait. That's blueapron.com/fifth. Okay, we're back. Scotty Hughes is here with us, and we're talking about Donald Trump's first 100 days. We've discussed some domestic policy, Supreme Court vacancies. Let's talk a little bit about.
Yeah, I think we left it on nuclear bombs.
Yeah, pretty much.
I thought Metamucil.
Well, we did. We left it on Metamucil, which, you know, depending on your constitution, could be a nuclear bomb to the system. But let's move on to foreign policy. And let's talk about President Trump's foreign policy ideas. Foreign policy is not just alliances and going to war and that sort of thing, but it also does involve trade. It involves our policies with other nations and that sort of thing. So let's start there, and let's talk about the announcement that I think just came today that President Trump would like to pull out of the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which is a free trade agreement with several Asian nations. Scotty, what do you think about that? Do you think that's a sound policy, or go ahead.
Absolutely, I think it's sound policy, because Mr. Trump does not want to make, you know, we say America first. He wants to put the emphasis on us, but more importantly, he wants to make it fair. He wants to make sure that we aren't having these currency manipulations that we know the Chinese are doing, that we know other ones are doing. We want to actually give it a chance that American businesses are incentivized to stay in America, make their products in America, and then sell their products in America. And the way that our balance has been for the last 8 years, for the last 20 years, has been to where businesses, there's something wrong when our businesses are more incentivized to go into other countries and make product and sell it back here, that they make more money. There's something not right about that. And the other governments do not hold their businesses to the same standards that we hold ours. And more importantly, the manipulation of the currency and between the two and the interest rates and the interest values, they just don't work out to where it's actually punishing American businesses. I don't blame it. There is a reason why up until, you know, a few months ago, and I don't know, we've not even started to focus on the actual textile industry. Well, almost, I think I read a statistic, 95% of all clothing is now made outside of the United States that is sold here in the United States. 95%, as opposed to even 20 years ago when it was down to like only 25% was made on the outside. And the reason is you just can't, you know, because of labor and Obamacare and all of the government regulations, businesses cannot thrive in this country. So the TPP is a very good step. He doesn't want to give America the upper hand and make them be this oppressor in trade. He just wants to make sure that we're playing on a balanced field and that it's actually an equal field across the board for everybody.
So do you think that if the Japanese and the other Asian nations, do you think that President Trump would be more interested in renegotiating TPP or pulling out altogether?
Well, that's up to him to decide. I think it's better at this point that we definitely need to have some sort of trade partnership. But here's the other thing I think that we're noticing with Mr. Trump, especially with this the meeting on Friday that's going to happen with the Prime Minister of Great Britain coming over. I think he's saying, instead of me making an agreement with five countries that you guys are all banded together, you know, making this, you know, one size fit all, which doesn't, let's do it individually. Let's let America work with you. Then let's let America work with you. And whether we're talking about defense, whether we're talking about trade, let's do this one-on-one instead of us, and this is what we've seen in NATO, instead of us carrying the water and the burden for so many countries and them not being held accountable and allowed to get away with what we've seen them do, a drain on the system without paying back to it.
Okay, well, that's one aspect of another aspect that again, it's, this kind of ties, you know, it's foreign policy, but it relates to domestic, you know, domestic issues as well. And that is the tariffs that President Trump is threatening against foreign automakers. Now, this is one issue where I'm going to split with him completely. And this is one, you know, thing where I'm not going to sit there and say, I don't think there's any common ground. I think tariffs are a bad idea, and you know, whether now if he's using it as a negotiating tactic, great. But if, you know, if there is going to be a thing where he's going to go to the leaders in Congress and say, I want a bill here with a 30% tariff that's going to be placed on all foreign automakers if they're not making their cars here in the United States, which, you know, a lot of them are, but not all of them, and I think it's not possible for them to do that. So I don't think that's a good economic decision. So so I'll let you kind of let me see what you think about that, and what in when what you've seen and your knowledge of what you've seen is, as you have you followed the campaign, you've talked to people there. What's the sense that you get? Is he really wanted to do that, or is he kind of saying it because he's just kind of wants to put pressure on them to create more jobs here in the United States?
I think it's a little bit of both, but I think ultimately his goal was would be to have them made here in the United States, especially if it's a supposed American car brand. I live here in Tennessee. In Tennessee, we have Volkswagen that is made here. We have Nissan North America moved all of their headquarters here. We have a Ford plant just a little bit up the street from us. I'm trying to think. I thought we had one more. We did have Saturn and GM down to the south of us, but Saturn actually went under based on, unfortunately, the labor unions that basically squelched it to death, and they couldn't make their car, and the car just, you know, it actually just stunk. But I am in a very automaker-friendly state, and the reason being, we have no income tax in this state. We have very low taxes. Our sales tax is 9%, but considering we don't have an income tax here, and we're not like Florida, we're not like Texas, we don't have other ways of supplementing. It is truly just based on the fact that we still ended the state with the year with a budget surplus. Taxes, lowering taxes on the American people and on America and the products made here actually work. And I think you saw that today. And I think that's Mr. Trump's ultimate goal. But more importantly, right now, when you're looking at, you know, last year, the big Ford that went down, where Ford was not going to close its plant in Detroit, but they were going to build a plant down in Mexico, and it was going to provide, you know, 3,000 to 4,000 jobs down there. But that was not American jobs we were losing. But they were going to ship the product back to America for America to buy. Yes, that was American jobs, the potential American jobs. And now that we've proven that Detroit is not, that Ford's not going to do that, and they're coming back here and building the plant here, it worked. We now have 4,000 jobs being added back in. Tariffs, you know, why is it unfathomable to think that American products or vehicles that we're going to eventually purchase cannot be made here for the right price? And that we will be able to afford them. Why is that so hard to comprehend, especially on products that are known to be American brands? Why are we incentivizing these companies to go across the border and make their product?
Fascinating. Now, very briefly, let's touch on President Trump's cabinet appointees. Specifically, let's stick with kind of the foreign policy realm. Let's talk about his Secretary of Defense nominee, James Mattis, and Rex Tillerson for Secretary of State. What do you think about those two as picks? What do you think their strengths are?
Well, when I look at the headline that Mattis celebrates first day at Pentagon by blowing up ISIS 31 times, I think that was probably a pretty good choice, don't you? I think this is, you know, if he can have that sort of an effect within the first time and bombardment of ISIS, and you read over what those attacks, what they were on, it's incredible. It shows how inept this last administration was with the Secretary of Defense. He's definitely made it a very military-heavy cabinet, so that, you know, and I'm one that supports the military, but I'm hoping, you know, that sometimes they're known to be a little bit more aggressive and not necessarily diplomatic. But I think that's where Rex Tillerson does come in. I wasn't necessarily a top fan of his, but then the more I thought about it, it comes to it. Mr. Trump always said on the campaign trail that he wants proven success. He is impressed by success. And to him, he looks at anybody that was a politician as not being successful, because look at the state that we're in right now with $19 trillion in debt. So why would he put someone that has allowed our country to make some grave decisions that have put us in that state as being successful? He wasn't going to take that. But then you look at what Rex Tillerson has done in the private sector, and he sees that and he respects that. I think it will be interesting to see how well this works, because the one thing about Rex is he's already worked with a lot of these foreign diplomats. He already knows their inner workings and their secrets, and he already knows how, you know, what they're going to do. So I think it will be interesting to see once the confirmation happens, and I want to give him some time to actually warm up to it. But I will tell you this, I do have a reservations about having somebody that's never been in any sort of diplomatic position before with the government, representing the government, putting me into this position. But you know what? I'm cautiously optimistic, and it's worked out pretty well, so well for Mr. Trump in this position as President Trump. We'll see what Rex has to do.
Fantastic. So let's move into the closing section here. If you could assign a letter grade to President Trump for his first few days, what letter grade would you give him?
Well, I know it's obvious because of, you know, I can't go against my stereotype. You know, I would say an A. I mean, that'd be anything but. How about this? I'll say this: the one thing that I wish that he would have corrected, I think that he's doing a lot on his own, and I think they were not prepared for the administration side of it, the White House side, the communication side of it. I think that we could have, you know, I'm hearing from radio hosts and others that just don't feel like they're getting all the information they need, that when they have to look to the internet and to the lamestream media for the facts coming out, I think I just wish there was more of an infrastructure set up within the White House and in that side of it at this point. But I think for what he's doing everything he promised he would do. And I think we've seen a lot more activity out of that White House this first week than we've seen in a long, long time.
Yeah, that's you bring up a good point. There were a lot of people who were disappointed that the Trump team, when the allegations were made about allegations were made about Representative Price about his stock deals, that they took a little too long to come out with the information that said, hey, you know, he did everything above board. Here's the timeline. Here's how it all happened. They got it out there, but they seemingly were I think they were caught a little bit behind. And some people were like, you know, they needed to be a little faster on that. And so hopefully they'll learn a little bit from that. But, you know,
have to know it. You know this. You've been in the movement long enough. You know, while we might have disagreed this past year, prior to that, we probably were on the same board on 99% of the issues. So we know all of these folks they're putting into office. We know Tom Price. We know, I wouldn't say Elaine Chao is necessarily part of the conservative movement. But we know a lot of these folks he's putting in are products of the grassroots of the conservative movement. And it doesn't seem like they're really getting the input and the background of those of us that know how. Oh, Jeff Sessions. We know Senator Jeff Sessions. We know what makes him tick, what doesn't. And it's not like, and they just really, I don't feel like they really had the depth to some of these and understood the depth to some of these people that they might have just met on the campaign trail this past year.
All right. Well, so that kind of wraps it up. This is a good discussion.
Well, I hope you find out why I've said that you've been right on a couple, you know, on things throughout the year, and why we do actually probably agree on a lot more than we disagreed upon. And that's what hurt me so bad during the election, because these were people that I had stood shoulder to shoulder with for the last 8 years fighting with on the same team, and now we were battling each other. I'm hoping that Trump will make that better, and that the more he's able to be a success, we can see where we all really have to work together.
Yeah, it was really just a brutal primary season. And, you know, the reality is that, you know, Donald Trump is the president. And so we need to adjust, those of us who weren't, that wasn't our first choice. So take the good with the bad and move along. So, Scotty, thank you so much for being with us. We have... we have one more piece of business that we need to attend to, and that is our one gotcha question that we ask of our guests. We like to surprise our guests with one thing that we just don't go over beforehand and try to see what their reaction is. So, in this case, the question we want to ask you is one of vital cultural importance. But I want you to know, no matter how you answer, Jay and I, we will not think any less.
I'm nervous. I'm like, I'm still like breaking out in hives right now. I feel like I'm about to go on a panel of eight again.
You know, here's the thing. It is something
I just got out of therapy from the past year, boys. Don't put me back in.
No, I think you'll be okay, but it is something that we need to take this very seriously. We need to take this very seriously because it's something Jay and I disagree on very strongly. Oh boy. And so that question, Scotty, could Tom Hardy be a good James Bond?
Oh, I don't know. I'm going to have to say, to me, I've not watched the last like four James Bond movies. I'm sorry. I think, what is it? Pierce Brosnan will always be my James Bond. Yeah. I frankly, without Googling who Tom Hardy is, I'm going to say no, because I have no idea who it is. And in my mind, why ruin the perfection?
Yeah, I agree. That's the right answer, Scott.
Yeah, of course it's the right answer because she agrees with you, but she doesn't even know why she's agreeing with you.
I don't even know why. I think there's been, I think we've actually weakened and completely. Why ruin perfection? It's like they wanna, it's like saying House of Cards is you're just going to replay episodes from this last year's election scene. I mean, why ruin perfection?
Tom Hardy has that certain je ne sais quoi, which is that he seems only able to play characters who would never say the words je ne sais quoi.
That's not true.
I just don't see him as Bond. I just don't see him as Bond. Jay thinks he would be a fantastic James Bond.
He was in Star Trek. That alone right there should disqualify you from anything that seems like really manly.
Was he in Star Trek?
In that movie.
Yeah. I don't think he was in Star Trek. Was he in
Star Trek? Nemesis 2002.
Oh, he was. You're right. Oh, my gosh. Deep cut.
Okay, now hold on a second. That's going back a while because he was also in Black Hawk Down, though.
Put it in that one. But still,
Before we go any further, I think I should ask this for bonus points. Scotty, Star Wars or Star Trek?
Considering my name is Scotty, I have nothing to do with anything that says beam me up. I would definitely, but then again, I for Star Wars, I was very supportive of those people with a Star Wars addiction. I actually drove my family to go watch it. I gave them money for popcorn. I bought them the tickets and then I went shopping and picked them up afterwards.
That's perfect.
So neither.
Neither, but I'm very supportive of the addiction and the obsession that people have with it.
All right. How about this? Dean Martin or Frank Sinatra?
A split decision, Jay. Take your.
All right. Yeah, we'll end it there. Scotty, thank you so much for joining us. This was great.
Thank you for having me. This was a delight. This actually was a great way for me to end my day.
And you know what we'd like to do is we'd like to bring you back sometime in April after the first 100 days and kind of do a recap with us and we can kind of discuss what we've seen and what's gone on and kind of look back at this show and some of the things that we've said and see if what the president has done in that time. How about that? Does that sound something?
I think that would be wonderful unless it's an absolute disaster, then you'll probably have to get in line of a lot of people that want to say, I told you so.
I'm sure we'll have enough of that if that happens. So I don't have to worry about that. But once
you
again,
got it, guys. Of yeah, course, this has been great.
All right.
Hey, and you know what? Unlike what the women in the pink hat said, you guys are actually pretty cool.
All right.
Thank you.
So where can anybody find you on the interwebs?
Well, I hope you two tweet out how great of our conversation was and how much I totally got you guys on the whole Star Trek trivia. Tweet that out and I will retweet it. And hopefully a lot of the people that follow me will follow you guys back and listen to this podcast. And then you can also go to rightalerts.com and see a lot of things that my world works on these days and trying to make sure that we get out of this whole fake news business that they continue to accuse conservative media of.
All right. Well, that'll do it for us. Neil, any closing thoughts?
I'm just so impressed that she brought up the Tom Hardy in Star Trek Nemesis. I am spellbound right now.
Hey,
fantastic.
My blonde hair is just my camouflage. Okay,
look, there's hope for America.
When I know Legally Blonde and Star Trek characters, we know that it's a very odd world we're living in these days.
There it is. All right. All right, everyone. Thank you for listening. As we say, you know, go out there. Leave us a review on iTunes. Subscribe to this podcast. Tell your friends, tell your parents, tell everybody else that you know that to subscribe to this because we'll always have these great guests who make Neil and I sound a whole lot better. So that's going to do it for this episode of The Fifth Estate, and we will see you next time.